Sorry.
So I've got two places. I'm going to use them both.
Oh.
I forgot to say it's great to see Norman back. Yeah. Are you feeling well?
Yeah, I think so. I can lie like the rest of you.
What I was going to say was the flowers that are on the table, all prepared nicely by Hanneke herself. Please take one home with you. They're for you to take away, give to your mothers, or if you are a mother, help yourself. Nurse, cook, teacher, confidant, trainer, judge, maid, agony aunt, psychiatrist, style advisor, makeup artist, laundress, doctor, carer, cleaner, peacemaker, fashion advisor, taxi, seamstress, shopper, ironer, manager of miracles.
Yes. Keep going.
Mum for short. Do you recognise that description?
Yes.
Did I miss any jobs out? I learned something on the way to chapel this morning. I didn't really know where the origins of Mother's Day came from. Does anyone know? No? Well, it came from Roman times, actually. And what happened was that the Roman rulers who had slaves, they used to give their slaves a day off so they could go and see their mothers and their days. And then gradually, over time, the Christian church took it over, which we seem to do quite well, and we've celebrated ever since. So that's where it came from. Just for a short while, I just wanted to talk about an amazing woman, and that is Mary, the mother of Jesus. Now, I think Mary's a bit overlooked in the evangelical church, and I can't honestly recall anybody ever preaching about her. Now, I've just come back from a very Catholic Malta, and I can see a very different view of Mary, and there's loads and loads of different paintings, and there's sculptures, and there's churches which are all devoted to the Madonna. And on my mobile phone, I've taken a photograph, which you want to see afterwards, of a Madonna in the cathedral on Ingozo, in the centre there, and it's a sight to behold. But we tend to steer away, I think, from Mary. But as it's Mother's Day, I thought we'd have a look at one or two aspects of Mary's life and see if there's anything that we can learn from her. Well, we first meet Mary in the Nativity, don't we? And it's a very well-known story. And I guess the first thing that struck me was how old she was. We believe that she could only have been around about 15 or 16. Let's say 16, when she married Joseph. And yet God chose to use her. So I was just thinking to myself, well, God's no respecter of age, is he? And whether you're 80, like Moses, or 16, like Mary, God can actually use you. So don't think when you get to 80, you can retire. And just because you're 16, doesn't mean to say that God can't use you in the same way as he used Mary. In Luke 1:28-29, we find that the angel appeared to Mary and says, "Greetings, you who are highly favoured, the Lord is with you." Now, when angels appear to other people in the Bible, and I'm thinking especially of the shepherds here, they're absolutely scared witless. I find that Mary's reaction wasn't quite the same. She stands there, and the Bible tells us that she was greatly troubled at the greeting, but seemingly not scared. And she wondered what the greeting might mean. I think she was a thinking girl. For a 16-year-old, I'm thinking about my kids when they were 16, were they thinkers? I'm not sure. When God called someone to an important task, to a mission that would stretch this person like never before, the assurance that the Lord would give them is that the Lord would be with them. When Moses, for example, was called by God at the burning bush, and he was told to go off to tell Pharaoh to let the people go, the Lord told Moses, "I will be with you." You can read that in Exodus 3, verse 12. And then when Joshua was called to lead the people into the hostile territory of the promised land, God said, "I will be with you." That's in Joshua 1, verse 5. And then when Gideon was called by the angel to liberate the people from the Midianites, the angel said, "The Lord will be with you." And you can read that in Judges 6, verse 12. So, when Mary hears from the angel, "The Lord is with you," now she's a devout Jew, and she's well-versed in what the Old Testament says. She's standing in the tradition of Moses and Joshua and Gideon and David and anybody else who's heard the angel of the Lord say, "The Lord is with you." And they were heard those when they were called to their crucial missions. These words would indicate to Mary that God is about to call her to some important mission in his saving plan. Upon hearing those words, Mary probably was thinking, "Oh no, what might God be asking me to do?" No wonder she was greatly troubled. You know, I don't think it's unreasonable that we should take some time to consider what God has in store for us, to make sure that it's right and proper to do the thing that he's calling us to do. In that account of the nativity, of the meeting of the angel, Mary was asking questions of the angel, you know, along the lines of, "Well, you're asking me to do this, but how's it going to happen? Because, you know, I'm not married." And so she was thinking round in her head, how on earth is this going to be, that I'm going to be highly favoured of God and you're going to do this to me, but hang on a minute, I'm not this and I'm not that. And But she thought about it. She pondered about it. And then when she thought about it, and when she'd considered everything, she said, "May it be to me as you have said." So she considered everything, and then she acted. She stepped out in faith. And so starts her part in this story, the story of Christ. And then she sings a song, which we don't hear too much of, but she starts singing. She says, "My soul praises the Lord, and my spirit rejoices in God my Saviour. For he has been mindful of the humble state of his servant. And from now on, all generations will call me blessed. For the Mighty One has done great things for me. Holy is his name. His mercy extends to those who fear him from generation to generation. He has performed mighty deeds with his arm. He has scattered those who are proud in their inmost thoughts. He has brought down rulers from their thrones, but has lifted up the humble. He has filled the hungry with good things, but sent the rich away empty. He has helped out his servant Israel, remembering to be merciful to Abraham and his descendants forever, even as he said to our fathers. When the baby is born and the shepherds visit, we are told that she treasures up all that she's seen and heard and ponders them in her heart. We are told the same thing when Jesus is found in the temple after being left behind. And isn't it great to treasure up things, especially the good things that God has done for us? And why would I do that? So in the bad times, we have things to remember and we can stand firm on. We don't hear of Mary again until Jesus starts his ministry. And there's a curious passage in Luke 8, verse 19. And it's about when Jesus' mother and brothers comes to see him. And it says, "Now Jesus' mother and brothers came to see him, but they were not able to get near him because of the crowd." I always thought it was a bit of a strange passage. I thought that Jesus was sort of snubbing his mother and brothers in favour of his disciples and the rest of the people who were around him. This is when Jesus had just started his ministry and he was telling people all about the parables, and there was loads and loads of people and they just couldn't get close to him. Well, in isolation, yeah, it does look a bit of an odd passage, but if you look to the other Gospels and just read around it, it's Mark 3, verse 21, it says that his family came to take him away and save him from himself because they felt that he was out of his mind and he'd gone a bit mad. You can imagine that for somebody who's been a carpenter for most of his life, to suddenly turn into an itinerant preacher, his mother might feel a bit protective towards him and think that he's sort of gone the wrong way. And sometimes today, mothers ought to take their children by the hand, he says. Sorry. I think Mary's showing here protection and compassion for Jesus, trying to save him from what she believed the wrong route was he was taking. And we too need to take some example from that. We need to be equally compassionate to our fellow believers, ensuring that out of love and protection, we point the right direction to, you know, our fellow Christians and people that we see who may be actually taking the wrong direction. I don't see anything wrong in that. We don't hear of Mary again until the crucifixion. And she's mentioned in John 19. And we'll remember these stories in a couple of weeks' time, won't we? What's it say in John 19:26? It says, "Near the cross of Jesus stood his mother, along with his mother's sister, along with the other Marys." You had to be called Mary in those days. You couldn't be called anything else. I'm only joking. I just wonder what Mary was thinking at that time. I mean, she must have been going over and over and over what the angel had said to her right at the very beginning about how great Jesus was going to be and what he was going to do and how he was going to bless everyone and how he was going to save this country or the people that believed in him. And, you know, the words of that Mary's song, they were so concise, direct, and they were clear, weren't they? But here we were. You know, after that, she'd seen those people giving gifts and worshiping him. Did she start to doubt that her testimony was true, what she'd learnt? As Jesus' life disappeared, did she think that that was the end? It can't be easy for a mother to watch your child's life disappear. She was the only one who had been there right from the beginning, wasn't she? In the whole of this great story, she was there before he was born. She'd lived with him, brought him up, cared for him, watched him go off into the world, and now she was standing there watching him die. It's difficult for a mother, isn't it? I think our lives can feel like that, can't it, sometimes? What was the first thing the angel said? He said, God is with you. I just think it's worth remembering that. Because, you know, when we are Christians, we believe that God is with us. And no matter what situation we are, whether it's good, whether it's bad, we believe that God is with us. And God loves us. Well, that wasn't the actual end of the story. Because in Acts, we read about Mary one more time. And that is in Acts 1:14, so it's right at the beginning of the Acts, when, what does it say in 14? It says, they all joined together constantly in prayer, along with the women and Mary, the mother of Jesus, and his brothers. So that's the final mention I can find of Mary. And they were together with all the other disciples, all the other believers, about 120 at that time. And they were there constantly. They were constantly praying, and I guess maybe taking communion, breaking the bread like they were asked to do. How do I read this? Well, I think that Mary became a believer. And I actually think that the whole journey from right from the very birth to from the parenting to the concern for Jesus' despair when he was killed by to the obvious joy at the risen Christ, I think that that whole journey, it culminated in salvation for her and her other sons. It might not have made sense through the whole 30 odd years that Jesus was around, but in the end, I think it all became clear to her. And I actually think that salvation visited her and the brothers. We don't hear about Mary thereafter. What she did, I don't know. One day we might find out. But I just think it's a great story. It's a great story of how a young lady can be used of God and what she had to go through, good, bad, through the life. But at the end, she saw salvation. I guess the question I need to leave with you is that she had an interest in life. And no matter what happened in it, at the end, and I guess she must have been about, I don't know, 50. She became a Christian. And I just wonder how your life will unfold.